Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this state, Tuesday, August 13th, 2019. Let's begin with some of today's headlines. The first headline reads, "The Week Ahead, NAACP UIPD Ceremony Set. You're Trying to Build a Bridge. Event to highlight shared beliefs of cops, communities of color." This article is written by Deborah Pressey and is based out of Urbana. University of Illinois Police and the NAACP of Champaign County are planning to hold a ceremony this week to reinforce the importance of a set of principles they both endorse and hold dear. Among those principles are that the life of every person has the highest value, that discrimination in any form must be rejected, and that everyone must be treated with dignity and respect. All 10 principles are included in a document that was developed and approved in 2018 by the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police and the NAACP Illinois State Conference. U of I Police also adopted the principles last year. To be on display at the U of I Police Department, these principles represent much more than a document of the beliefs that police and communities of color have in common, according to U of I Police Chief Craig Stone. He believes it's important that all interactions between police and the public are positive and that everyone is treated with dignity and respect, he said. Community policing depends on developing strong relationships, and we recognize our responsibility to be proactive in listening to and responding to the needs of all community members, he said. Highlighting our common ground is an important step in this process. Champaign County NAACP President Minnie Pearson said her organization has a good relationship and positive contacts with U of I Police. She recalled going to Springfield with Champaign Police Chief Anthony Cobb to sign the document of shared principles. Why this initiative is important, Pearson said, is because it's about building trust between police and the neighborhoods they serve. You're trying to build a bridge, she said. Among the other shared principles are an endorsement of fairness, transparency, impartiality, and an opportunity for citizens and police to believe they are heard. A shared belief that law enforcement and community leaders have a mutual responsibility to encourage all people to have a better understanding and knowledge of the law to help them in their interactions with law enforcement officers. A support for diversity in police departments and in the law enforcement profession. A belief that de-escalation training should be required to ensure the safety of community members and officers. The U of I Police and NAACP Champaign County ceremony will be held at 2 p.m. Thursday at the U of I Police Department, which is located at 1110 West Springfield Avenue in Urbana. U of I Police said the shared principles will be hung in their briefing room, where patrol officers begin their shifts. Pearson said her organization and police are doing all they can to help everyone understand that at the end of each day, they want everyone, every citizen, every police officer, to make it home safely to their families. We want to make sure, too, that the trust isn't broken, she said. The next headline reads, Unit 4, Transformative Effort. New district policy restricts use of P-cards. This article is written by Lindsay Jones and is based out of Champaign. Effective after a unanimous school board vote Monday night, the Champaign School District has official policies in place that govern the usage of district-issued purchasing cards, or P-cards. It's the first time the district has implemented any formal policy on the cards, which were first introduced in 2014. The new policies are aimed at preventing misuse of the cards. In May, a News Gazette media analysis of 19 months of district credit card spending records revealed scores of food purchases, occasional funeral or sympathy gifts, or working or meeting-related lunches. Among other restrictions, gift card purchases and travel-related meals are no longer eligible to be paid for via such cards. The controversy surrounding the use of the cards, also known as P-cards, began with the district's chief financial officer, Tom Lockman, began when he publicized his concerns, reporting them to Illinois State Police and serving as a source for the News Gazette media investigation. Lockman was placed on administrative leave by the district in mid-June and has said he did not receive an explanation for the move, but believes it is related to his role in drawing attention to the alleged abuse. The school board has not yet voted on whether to terminate Lockman, although Superintendent Susan Zola recommended at a previous board meeting that it do so. In other board news Monday, the board approved a revised one-year plan for drills on shooters on campus, with officials pointing specifically to changes implemented as a result of meetings with parents. I worked throughout the summer to try to respond to many of their recommendations, said Orlando Thomas, the district's Director of Achievement and Student Services. Many of their recommendations were great. They were best practices. They were developmentally appropriate. Among those changes, the district incorporated social workers into district-wide crisis community to address the mental health ramifications of the drills. Two social workers also worked this summer on revising presentations about the ALICE, A-L-I-C-E, Alert, Lockdown, Inform, Counter, Evacuate, Drill, to students to be more developmentally appropriate, Thomas said, adding that was a direct request from some parents. In addition, Thomas noted that this year's ALICE drill, which is mandated by state law, will be announced ahead of time and will be the only one. Previous plans accounted for two drills, one announced and one unannounced, but the board vote on a one-year plan eliminated that proposal. More information on which students may be exempt from the drill is forthcoming, as board members asked for more information before voting on whether to incorporate special language about that into the policy. The board also approved putting $78,000 toward playground equipment for Robeson Elementary School. Principal Jessica Pitcher told board members that drainage issues had long been an issue for the school's facilities and that its parent-teacher association had been raising money on its own for an update. When the affected playground area floods, she said, we end up with a pond beneath our playground equipment. It's standing water that can be a foot deep. It can become a sheet of ice. Some equipment was also around for 30-plus years, so there are a couple of pieces that are not functional as well. The PTA will combine the funds it has raised with those from the district to cover the costs for equipment and the surface beneath it, whether it's rubber, mulch, or a surfacing known as pour-in-play. District officials clarified they do plan to do site work to resolve the drainage issues, but a dollar amount for the work was not available on Monday. The next headline reads, National Weather Service, Tornado Watch Issued for East Central Illinois. This article is written by Tim Mitchell. The National Weather Service issued a tornado watch Monday evening for East Central Illinois. The tornado watch was in effect until 3 a.m. today for Champaign, Coles, DeWitt, Douglas, Edgar, Moultrie, Piatt, and Vermilion counties. I think it's Moultrie. That could be a misprint. I apologize for any mistake there. Affected areas include the cities of Champaign, Charleston, Clinton, Danville, Mattoon, Monticello, Paris, Sullivan, Tuscola, and Urbana. A tornado watch means that conditions created a significant risk of a tornado. The next headline reads, Construction, Southside Elementary, Bathrooms to be ready in time as delay pushes completion date. This is again in that Unit 4 transformative effort column. This article is written by Lindsay Jones and is based out of Champaign. Renovations to the second-floor bathrooms are on track to be finished on Wednesday, just in time for the start of classes the next morning. It's been a close call for crews at Southside Elementary, one of six Champaign school buildings getting multi-million-dollar makeovers as part of the taxpayer-approved 2016 referendum. Southside itself will get $12.1 million worth of upgrades, including modernized classrooms, improved access, and an addition. On Monday, new principal Christian Mahoney could picture the finished product, even as fifth graders prepare to spend the semester in portable classrooms and construction workers hammer away nearby on the parking area. I'm pretty excited about it, said Mahoney, who had served as principal of Springfield's Extreme Summer Academy prior to joining Unit 4 this summer. The part that is a little bit frustrating is that when you do get behind, you have to figure out how to work around it. My top priority is to make sure my students are safe. Staff has been very understanding. We know we had a little bit of a headache, but we'll have a brand new building and space, and I'm excited for it. The project fell a little bit behind schedule when asbestos removal, slated to last 6 days, wound up taking 3 weeks. That means the timetable of the school's major addition now has a projected end date of January 2020, not December. Southside, Edison Middle School, and Centennial High School are all scheduled to be finished in summer of 2021. And since you asked, have a question about Unit 4's plans, head to our website and ask away. The next headline reads, Capital Punishment. State legislature wants Illinois to reinstate the death penalty. This article is written by Rebecca Anzell and is based out of Springfield. A Republican state lawmaker is calling for the resurrection of the death penalty in Illinois after two mass shootings in the United States and recent gun violence in Chicago. Barrington Hills Representative David McSweeney said he will either sponsor or co-sponsor some version of a measure overturning the abolishment for former Governor Pat Quinn placed on capital punishment 8 years ago. Former Governor George Ryan had placed a moratorium on the death penalty in 2000. At the time, Quinn said Illinois should not have a system in place that might result in the erroneous execution of citizens. McSweeney said eliminating the death penalty was a terrible mistake. It has been a complete failure, he said. Mass shootings in El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio, on August 3rd and August 4th, respectively, killed 31 people. In Chicago last weekend, 4 people were killed and 43 were reportedly injured in gun-related violence. Texas officials are pursuing the death penalty against the coward racist who targeted Mexican Americans in El Paso. We should have that tool in the state of Illinois, McSweeney said. The time to act is now because the death penalty is a deterrent that we need to protect our citizens. No one can argue the state of Illinois is a model for how to fight crime. In part, Quinn's argument for signing legislation making Illinois the 16th state to abolish capital punishment was the lack of advancement in DNA testing, McSweeney said. But DNA technology has progressed light years beyond its stage in 2011, he added, to be the key to ensuring there are no wrongful convictions. I want to make sure there are safeguards, he said. According to a Pew Research Center study published last year, 54% of Americans support capital punishment for those convicted of murder. That number is up from 49% 2 years prior. 39% of people oppose the death penalty. That's 39%. McSweeney is not the only Illinois politician to express support for capital punishment. In an unexpected move last year, former Republican Governor Bruce Rauner proposed reviving the death penalty by using his amendatory veto power on a firearms measure that needed his signature to become law. The legislation would have extended the 72-hour waiting period for gun purchases to include assault weapons, Rauner wrote in his veto message that the proposal did not go far enough to prevent gun violence incidents and other public safety concerns. His addition would have created a new category of crime, a death penalty murder, quote-unquote, that encompassed anyone 18 or older who killed two or more people without lawful justification or if the victim is a police officer. The ultimate public safety objectives of this bill would be better served with comprehensive solutions, he wrote, which included a ban on bump stocks, the addition of mental health and law enforcement personnel in schools, and reintroducing the death penalty for the most egregious cases. The General Assembly did not vote on Rauner's proposal, effectively running out the clock on the bill. Before Rauner's push last year, Illinois' staunchest supporter of the death penalty in state politics arguably was former Representative John Cavalletto, a Republican from Salem. Cavalletto's last iteration of a measure to reinstate the death penalty would have applied to persons older than 18 who were convicted of first-degree murder for killing a police officer, firefighter, employee of a correctional agency, or a child, or for killing more than one person. Cavalletto's legislation never moved out of committee, and McSweeney said he knows he faces an uphill battle with the Democrat-controlled General Assembly. This one will have a lot of opposition. I don't think it's going to happen in the short run, but it's an issue I will continue to focus on through public education and through pointing out and proving the advances in DNA technology, he said. I believe it's the right thing to do. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, a Democrat, filed legislation to strike the use of capital punishment by the federal government. The move came after President Donald Trump's administration announced last month it would resume the use of the death penalty for the first time in 16 years. Try as we might, we cannot escape the fact that the death penalty in America is disproportionately imposed on minorities and poor people, Durbin said. But McSweeney said a capital punishment measure is worth having a discussion about in a committee hearing. There needs to be a coordinated effort between state officials and the federal government to once and for all end this problem of violence in the city and in our state, he said. We need to get tough on crime again in this state and defend our citizens. And now let's take a look at our weather forecast for the next week. This is provided to us by Greg Solier and his column on the weather front. A push of cooler air into the east will be accompanied by a heat wave across the inner mountain west and central high plains. Hot, humid, mostly dry weather will persist on the southern high plains. Most of the northern U.S. will continue to experience cooler than normal weather. During the next 5 days, the general focus for heavy showers and a few severe thunderstorms will shift from the northern plains and Midwest into the southeast. Late in the week, a resurgence of monsoon-related showers could lead to locally heavy rain in the southwest. The 6 to 10 day outlook calls for near or above normal temperatures and near or below normal rainfall across most of the country. Today, 82 degrees, becoming partly sunny. A shower and thunderstorm in spots before noon. West to northwest wind 7 to 14 miles per hour, gusty. Overnight, partly cloudy. Northwest to north wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Wednesday, the high is 83, the low is 64, mostly sunny, northeast wind 8 to 15 miles per hour, gusty, overnight, fair. Thursday, the high is 82, the low is 61, sunny. Friday, the high is 85, the low is 58, mostly sunny. Saturday, the high will be 87, the low will be 63, and it will be partly sunny. And now, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. The honor roll of area state fair stars continues to grow. Joining the hog calling and karaoke champs spotlighted in these pages on Monday, Paxton's Faith Foster, a grand champion of poultry meat pen, a 17-year-old high school senior. She celebrated at Saturday's Parade of Champions in Springfield, and tonight will be honored at the sale of champions. She was stunned, said her dad, Darrell Foster, adding, she knew her chickens were quality birds. Faith is a longtime member of Gibson City's Prairie Fire 4-H Club. And here there is a picture of Faith Foster. And she's got a baseball cap on. And she is standing in front of a cage of her prize-winning chickens. There's about two or three of them. And she's holding a silver plate with a purple first prize ribbon on it. So congratulations to her. And now in history, area history. In 1919, a request to send 339 men to Ross Field near Los Angeles threatened to close Chanute Field in Rantoul. In 1969, the Urbana School Board decided that its new junior high school, under construction on East Washington Street, would be named after the late Dr. Norris L. Brookins. Dr. Brookins had served on the school board for 15 years and died on July 28, 1969. He was replaced on the board by attorney Harold Jensen. In 2004, school officials in Catlin approved a 2-year contract for the teachers' union that would result in most district employees receiving an annual 4.6% pay raise. In international history, today's highlight, on August 13, 1961, East Germany sealed off the border between Berlin's eastern and western sectors before building a wall that would divide the city for the next 28 years. On this date, in 1846, the American flag was raised in Los Angeles for the first time. In 1860, legendary sharpshooter Annie Oakley was born in Dark County, Ohio. In 1889, William Gray of Hartford, Connecticut, received a patent for a coin-operated telephone. In 1910, Florence Nightingale, the founder of modern nursing, died in London at the age of 90. In 1932, Adolf Hitler rejected the post of Vice Chancellor of Germany, saying he was prepared to hold out for all or nothing. In 1960, the first two-way telephone conversation by satellite took place with the help of Echo One. And in 1995, Baseball Hall of Famer Mickey Mantle died at a Dallas hospital of rapidly spreading liver cancer. He was 63. The next headline reads, Urbana City Council, code update suggested, cap raffle prizes. This article is written by Alberto Toledo and is based out of Urbana. Uncomfortable with the prospect of unlimited prize money following new state laws on gambling, Alderman Mary Alice Wu has called for the city to update its code with a cap on the amount of money someone can win in a raffle. Wu said during Monday's Committee of the Whole meeting that she understands that the city must update its code based on the new gambling laws that came into effect on July 1st. But one thing I did notice is that one of the items the legislature changes is eliminating the requirement for a limit, meaning the city doesn't have to set one, but could if we choose. Janice McAteer, spokeswoman for Developmental Services Center, told aldermen that the agency is one of several NCU trying to start a Queen of Hearts raffle in an effort to raise funds. Under the new state rules, her agency and most other nonprofits are allowed to raise money through raffles, a welcome alternative to traditional and often time-consuming fundraising methods. Fundraisers are so labor and staff intensive, McAteer said. This gives us more flexibility to not have as much staff and time consumed to raise money, and hopefully this has a good return for us. Wu said her reservation is that the flexibility given by the new laws could open the door to abuse. It leaves the door wide open, said Wu, who advocated for a prize limit of $1 million. People can form non-for-profits and do stuff. I don't want anyone with nefarious plans to take advantage of our community. But placing a limit won't do much, said city legal staff member Curtis Borman. Putting a limit on that won't stop raffle sales in the city, Borman said. They're allowed to sell statewide, so all an organization needs is to get a license from someplace else, like Champaign or Chicago. The only limitation that would be placed is that you need an Urbana raffle license if you're going to be drawing the winners in Urbana. And placing a limit could also hurt a local bar or restaurant's opportunity to get customers in the door on slow days, something Wu admitted following Monday's meeting. They won't get a cut, Wu said. They're not getting any money from the raffle, but what they do get is business. People come in and buy food and drink, so I don't want to cut off business by any means by putting these limits in. Still, Wu and others on the council will wait on city staff to report back with ways other municipalities in the region are dealing with the issue and whether they will be placing limits. That discussion will continue at next Monday's council meeting. In other business, the city is seeking public input on whether it should impose a local tax of up to 3% on recreational cannabis sales after it becomes legal in January. Discussion on the issue will begin at the August 26th council meeting, but Mayor Diane Marlin has asked the public to provide comments at next Monday's Committee of the Whole meeting. She said the conversation will also continue during the September 3rd council meeting. The same month, the Illinois Department of Revenue is asking municipalities to submit a memo advising them of their intention to tax or not tax recreational cannabis sales. The next headline reads, Chicago, one arrested in shooting at hospital, no injuries. This article is written by the Associated Press and is based out of Chicago. Authorities say a suspect is in custody after shots were fired outside a Chicago hospital and that no one was hurt. Police spokesman Tom Ahern, A-H-E-R-N, says the man began shooting outside the Jesse Brown VA Medical Center on Monday afternoon and then tried to enter the lobby. Ahern says security officers apprehended the man near the hospital entrance. Ahern says no one was injured, and authorities recovered a rifle that the man is believed to have used. Police took the man, into custody. Ahern says investigators haven't determined what led to the gunfire or who the man might have been targeting. The 200-bed hospital on Chicago's west side provides care to about 62,000 military veterans. The next headline reads, around the area, train crossing to close for rebuilding. Out of Gibson City, a Norfolk, Southern Railroad grade crossing will be closed for about a week starting Monday so it can be rebuilt. The Illinois Department of Transportation announced the closure of the crossing where it intersects with Illinois 9, Illinois 47, and Illinois 54. Out of Loda. The former Loda grade school building has been purchased by the ARDSMA, that's A-A-R-D-S-M-A, ARDSMA family, who intend to clean up the property, renovate the building over time, and use it for two of their businesses. The long vacant building on Jefferson Street is expected to be used as the shipping department for Mulberry Lane Farm and for labs and production for ARDSMA Research and Publishing, the family said. Out of Westville, Little E, an impersonator of a young Elvis Presley, who has performed in Las Vegas and Branson, Missouri, among many other stops, will kick off Labor Day festivities at St. Mary's Catholic Church, performing from 7 to 8:30 p.m. on August 30th. The next headline reads, St. Patrick's Youth Orchestra, group to play hits from silver screen. This is this article is based out of Urbana and is written by Tim Mitchell. A ensemble founded and directed by youths will perform a concert featuring music from films this weekend at Urbana's St. Patrick Church. The St. Patrick Youth Orchestra will present A Night at the Movies at 7:30 p.m. Saturday at the church, which is located at 708 West Main Street. The Youth Orchestra is one of the few such organizations founded and run by students. The free show will feature music from Phantom of the Opera, Harry Potter, Disney, and more. The SPYO, or the St. Patrick's Youth Orchestra, was started by Jack Reeder, then a student at Uni High, in March 2013, for students in grades 7 through 12. The ensemble has two goals, to create beautiful music and to provide a healthy social environment for students who are passionate about orchestral music. The next headline reads, Champaign Park District, state puts $200,000 toward bike trail. This article is written by Tim Mitchell and is based out of Champaign. The state is giving the Champaign Park District $200,000 to help develop the Greenbelt Bikeway Trail. Governor J.B. Pritzker announced Monday that the Park District would receive the grant to build a 1/10 of a mile trail section connecting the north end of Kauffman Park to the south end of Heritage Park in West Champaign. The trail will use the Canadian National Railroad's right-of-way. The Champaign Park District grant is one of 16 local projects statewide, receiving a total of $2.6 million of grant money to acquire, develop, and improve bike path facilities throughout Illinois. The next headline reads, Retail Theft. Woman accused of using fake cash. Actually, I don't think I'll have enough time to read this article, so I'll save it for part two. In the meantime, today on WDWS 1400 AM, tune in for Penny for Your Thoughts. It's Open Line with host Brian Barnhart at 9 AM. Your opportunity to vent, followed by the On the Money crew at 10 AM. Sports Talk tonight from 5 to 6 PM. Guests include Gophers beat writer Matt Jessen Howard. To chime in, call 217-356-9397, or you can always text 217-351-5357. Also on NewsGazette.com, inside Illini basketball with Scott Ritchie. On the 3-1 trip to Italy, I don't put a lot of stock in a loss in Netherlands in a different country in August without the full team. Obviously, fans wanted to see them win all those games. Some good performances individually against teams they should have handled. For our entire menu of podcasts, please visit the NewsGazette.com website and click on podcasts. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been the reading of Part 1 of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, August 13th, 2019. I'll be back shortly to read Part 2 of the News Gazette. Please stay with me. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful day.